This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The entire internet has been shut down. We are currently in the dark right now. There's no way of telling what's happening unless if you make a call or a text. We are currently in the dark now.
That's reporter Kudzai Zenawashi in Harare. We'll have latest from Zimbabwe coming up.
Also in Nairobi, an explosion rocks the upscale Dusit Hotel today. And in the DRC, the Constitutional Court began hearing opposition candidate Martin Fayulu's claim that he was robbed of victory.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
The Kenyan capital has been hit by another terror attack as an explosion rocked the upscale Dusit D2 hotel and office complex today, followed by heavy exchanges of gunfire. Police say a number of people were injured and there are reports of fatalities, but no confirmed numbers are immediately available. Witnesses reported seeing at least two bodies and said at least two dozen people were injured. The Somalia-based Al-Shabaab extremist group claims responsibility for the attack. It occurred a day after a Kenyan court ruled that three men must stand trial for their alleged role in the 2013 terrorist attack on Nairobi's Westgate Mall by Al-Shabaab. Simiyu Erunga is a retired captain in the Kenya Defense Forces who now runs the African Center for Security and Strategic Studies, a security consulting company in Nairobi, just a bit ago, who spoke with our colleague Vincent McCorry about today's attack.
Okay, one thing I want to tell you, so far, even the police and ourselves who do this issue of analysis, we are not very sure about the people behind this attack, although Al-Shabaab has already declared that they're the ones behind this attack. We are told, because of the developing story, there are about six people who went inside the building, and we are told one of them was actually captured alive with some guns on him, and therefore probably this is the guy who's going to shed more light on what has taken place. We cannot understand how brave and courageous these terrorists can be to pick on a target like Dusit Hotel and complex. Mm-hmm. But one, we know that if you go in, it's like a cul-de-sac. Coming out will only be the same entrance, is the same exit that you come out of Dusit. And therefore, for them to have picked on Dusit, either we want to imagine these are suicide fellows who don't believe they'll come out, or they are so confident that they can attack this place and probably have an exit that we don't know.
Yes.
But because it is a developing story, maybe we shall get more information as we listen and as we discuss.
And as we wait for that information, Captain, as an expert in security, having gone through this kind of attacks in the past, Kenya has gone through so many devastating attacks. What does this tell us? I mean, where is Kenya failing to learn from the past? How is it that this can still happen?
Okay, two things I want to discuss on this one. One is how Kenya has reacted on this current attack, and the second one, whether we've learned as a country or not. One, I want to share with you, the response time by the Kenya security forces was very impressive today. Number two, we realize the value of organization in what they are doing. They seem to be planning fairly well. We seem to see everything that we never saw, for example, in Westgate, already on the ground, in terms of the triage area, in terms of medical, in terms of and supplies. That one you can see. We're also seeing a very good showing in of incoming other security forces. So in terms of how the operation is being done, it looks to be flowing very well. And that, to me, is a lesson learned from Westgate.
That was Simiyu Erunga, an Africa security expert in Nairobi. He was speaking today with Vincent McCorry, the host of VOA's Africa 54 television news show.
The former president of the Somali Olympic Committee, Duran Farah, was in the hotel compound when the attack happened. He was with a Somali delegation meeting with an aid agency. He spoke with Harun Maruf of the VOA Somali service and described the attack.
Hello. Yes, Harun.
Describe to me exactly what happened, what you saw.
Thank you very much. I think what we thought, we went through a checkpoint in a hotel called Dusit D2 in Nairobi. We had a meeting with an organization who was actually based next to the hotel. And by the time we backed the place that we wanted to enter the office, we wanted to go, a lot of situation happened on the gate.
What happened next?
Next, there was a shooting, exchange of fire, a lot of fire. And we've seen people rushing and running around very badly. People are running in every direction.
So there was shooting, and then what did you do next?
And before we entered to the offices, we looked outside and we've seen people running from every direction.
And then
we came down and we ran with the people, and actually there was an alleyway behind the building, and we went through that one, that building.
So
and after about nearly 500 yards, there was a main road, we crossed the main road, and we were still hearing the gunshot.
So where did the explosion take place?
The explosion took place at the gate of the entry of the hotel and the compound. The hotel is in a compound, it is a big compound.
Was it a car
explosion? The hotel and also offices.
Was it a car explosion or suicide bombers?
We believe that it was a car explosion. Although we were not there at the time, but the signs, it was an explosion. And then I think some militias with guns came in.
Did you see anybody? Did you see anyone injured or killed?
Yeah, we've seen many people injured who've been taken out from the building. And I think what we're hearing, they're still in the compound. The attackers are still in the compound.
So describe to me the atmosphere, the situation at the time of the explosion.
The atmosphere, it was a very scary one. Actually, you can understand people who came from Norman for daily life to their offices and their place of work. And these sort of things happen. An explosion, a huge explosion, which is actually very frightening. And also, you see people with guns and shooting from every direction. So the people have to run away for their lives. Wherever they see, they feel it, they can run to.
So
luckily, we were one of those people who came out safe. And we are hopefully, all our prayers are with those who are inside, and hopefully we hope they will come out safely.
What time did the explosion occur?
It was exactly 3:30 p.m. in East African time.
That was Duran Farah, former president of the Somali Olympic Committee, speaking with VOA's Harun Maruf.
Zimbabwe's government has shut down internet access as violent protests continue to spread across the country. Many users are unable to access Facebook and the popular Facebook-owned instant messaging platform WhatsApp. Twitter and Instagram have reportedly also been affected. The protest erupted after President Emmerson Mnangagwa's announcement of a 150% rise in fuel prices last Saturday. Mnangagwa defended the decision yesterday at the start of a five-nation tour. He told reporters in Moscow that Zimbabwe is going through both political and economic reforms, and these do not come easily. It will take time for things to settle and results to be shown, he said. He also said the full fuel price hike was necessary because local fuel was the cheapest in the region. Reporter Kutsai Zvinovashi is in Harare, and he spoke with me today about the internet shutdown.
The entire internet has been shut down. We are currently in the dark right now. There's no way of telling what's happening. Unless if you make a call or a text, we are currently in the dark now.
And what is happening on the ground right now with this internet shutdown?
Well, the internet shutdown is coming after the first day of a 3-day shutdown, which was called by the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, ZCTU. So this is mainly coming from the president's announcement that fuel prices will be going up starting midnight of Saturday last weekend. So people are protesting against that and the general high cost of living we have experienced in the past weeks. These are some of the issues that have inspired this shutdown, considering the violence that characterized the first day of the stay away yesterday.
Now, there were several people killed yesterday when police in Harare and Bulawayo, they fired live ammunition at protesters. Is that correct?
It is correct. There are a lot of cases of gunshot wounds. I was on the phone with Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights, and they are saying by end of day yesterday they had recorded 26 cases of wounded people wounded from gunshots. While the number of how many people have died isn't exactly available at the present moment, some have been confirmed dead.
And what are people doing now to try to actually just make a living since they're not able to get to work?
The people are stuck in between a rock and a hard surface right now. You can't go to work because yesterday there were also reports of protesters who were harassing those people who were going to work, saying, "We said we are staying away. Why are you going to work?" So a colleague of mine who was covering in Kwazana, one of the hotspots where there was a lot of violence and barricaded roads, he had to pay for passage at every barricade that he went through, and he was threatened with violence. So there's no going around this one. We will have to stick it out, wait for 3 days and see where it goes. But the way the government is dealing with this, by shutting down the internet, they have made sure that the shutdown cannot be prolonged in any way because people have no means of communicating. So that means after 3 days, people will just have to assume that the stay away is now over and they'll go back to work. But if they turn on the internet, we may see another case where there is a follow-up action to say, let's do another shutdown in the coming week, or let's do a protest or something like that along those lines until government maybe hits to the call to reduce the fuel prices and the high cost of living.
That was reporter Kudzai Zvinovashi speaking with me from Harare.
In a stunning decision today, the International Criminal Court acquitted former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo of war crime charges. The ruling amounts to another major setback for ICC prosecutors in the first case against the former head of state of the Hague-based tribunal. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports, the ruling comes amid growing doubts about the effectiveness of the ICC as a court of last resort against the world's most heinous offenses.
Grants the defense motions for acquittal from all charges against Mr. Laurent Gbagbo and Mr. Charles Blegoudet. No! Come on!
Former Ivorian leader Laurent Gbagbo looked blank as he listened to the verdict of his acquittal at the International Criminal Court. But his supporters cheering in the public gallery forced presiding judge Kuno Tarfusser to call for order. The court found ICC prosecutors had failed to prove their case against Gbagbo and fellow defendant, ex-youth minister Charles Blegoudet. For Gbagbo and his backers, it was the end of a long fight, at least for now. Prosecutors can appeal the court's decision. The former president was charged with crimes against humanity in connection with violence that erupted after Ivory Coast disputed 2010 election. The country's current president, Alassane Ouattara, was ultimately declared the winner. But months of unrest left a bloody footprint in a country that had already weathered a civil war. Gbagbo's lawyer, Emmanuel Altit, called the ICC's verdict a victory for justice and for a man wrongly accused. But rights activists like Amnesty International's West and Central Africa Regional Director, Marie-Eveline Petrus-Barry, do not agree.
There are 3,000 people who died following that conflict in Côte d'Ivoire, and that the victims will not be able to seek justice, that they will not be able to seek reparations. And that's terrible because it keeps happening and impunity keeps on being the rule.
Critics fault the prosecution for a number of errors, including creating the perception of a one-sided justice by failing to simultaneously treat alleged war crimes carried out by Ouattara supporters. The Gbagbo ruling is the latest high-profile case for the prosecution. Last year, the ICC overturned a war crimes conviction against former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba. Bemba tweeted he was delighted about the acquittal of Gbagbo and Blegoudet. The court also dropped charges against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and Vice President William Ruto for insufficient evidence. But neither man was acquitted, and the prosecution complained about witness tampering and difficulties obtaining information from the Kenyan government. Jim Wormington is West Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch.
The big challenge for the ICC now is to show that it's an institution that is deserving of support, both from human rights groups like Human Rights Watch, from governments, but most importantly from victims who put so much faith in this institution.
What he and others fear is that victims on both sides of the Ivorian conflict will never have their voices heard or justice done, and the country will bury but not come to terms with its crisis. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Well, what I think was responsible was that the people...
I'm Yehius Wuhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Kenyan capital has been hit by another terror attack as an explosion rocked the upscale Dusty Hotel today, followed by heavy exchange of gunfire. Zimbabwe's government has shut down internet access as violent protests continue to spread across the country. And in a stunning decision today, the International Criminal Court acquitted former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo of war crime charges. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Well, Yehias, the DRC's post-election chaos moved to the judicial system today as the Constitutional Court began hearing opposition candidate Martin Fayulu's claim that he was robbed of victory. The 16-nation Southern African Development Community is expected to hold an emergency meeting Thursday in Addis Ababa to discuss the situation. The DRC's Election Commission says official results show opposition candidate Felix Tshisekedi won about 39% of the December 30th ballot to 35% for Fayulu. But Fayulu claims he got 61%. The influential Roman Catholic Church also has disputed the official count, although it hasn't said who it thinks won. The Financial Times has conducted its own count that it says is in line with Fayulu's tally. Several of the nine judges are allies of current President Joseph Kabila. Even if it were to rule against the official count, an annulment of the vote would keep Kabila in power until a new vote could be arranged.
As Nigerians prepare to cast their ballots in the presidential and national assembly elections, there are concerns about the impact of voter apathy. The elections are February 16th, followed by governor and state assembly elections on March 2nd. Nigeria's election body, the Independent National Electoral Commission, says of the 43.65% turnout in 2015, the country's southeast zone was among the places with particularly low turnout. Olu Omatayo is the president of the Civil Rights Realization and Advancement Network, a non-governmental organization. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about voter apathy and implications on the upcoming elections. He says some voters did not cast ballots because successive governments failed to keep election promises.
Well, what I think was responsible was that the people here are conscious of their business. And the fact that since the advent of this democracy, the masses believe that there have not been much economic gains. So people find it difficult to abandon their work and going about issue of voting or politics. So it's just the performance of successive governments in this zone. That's what I think is responsible.
Is it equally bad in the rest of the country, this voter apathy?
Well, it's bad because when just maybe 30% of the population that are entitled to vote voted, it doesn't give a good reflection of the outcome of an election.
Do you think the trend will change in the 2019 elections?
It may change slightly because of the massive campaign, the enlightenment by political parties and INEC. Actually, there is not going to be a massive or dramatic turn from what happened in 2019. Just a slight change from what happened in 2015.
Why do you say so, sir?
Because when you look, the feelings of the people, when you move with the people, people still believe that there have not been much improvement in the economy, that it has not actually affected the poor masses on the streets. So they felt that it's just like wasting of time for them to abandon their work and be going about their politics.
Are relevant agencies doing enough to make the people vote on election day?
What I see there is that INEC is actually doing its best campaigning and enlightening the people on the need for them to vote. But the thing still boils down to the parties in government. Once a party performs very well, it will encourage the people. But you see a lot of our people are in abject poverty. So that's the main reason why they don't actually focus or even have interest in this election. So it's the government that needs, successive government has to improve on their performance so that people will actually have, they will actually get what we see, what we can say, dividend of democracy. It will actually reflect in their lives. So that one will encourage them to participate more in this election and democracy.
Some political analysts say the inability of the parties to sell good ideas to the people can be a reason for voter apathy. What's your take on this?
It's not actually good idea that not selling good ideas. They have always been campaigning, giving people their manifesto and what they plan to do to them. But when you look at since 1999, when you look at it, just few governors that have actually performed at least above average in this zone. So that's why people feel that they have been hearing all this campaign. What they need is performance, what will reflect on their lives and the lives of their children. So that's what is actually happening in this zone. The people, they felt that they have not actually gained what they're supposed to gain in a democracy.
That was Olu Omotayo, president of Civil Rights Realization and Advancement Network, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye in Enugu, Nigeria. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, some Africans have concerns that Western versions of democracy are being imposed on the continent. Are democratic governments what's best for Africa? We'll discuss the issue on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
The Voice of America, VOA.